Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
All right, what's up? We're back. What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Time and Room Podcast, the best lacrosse podcast in the history of all lacrosse podcasts, Dane. It's all about lacrosse.
I love it.
Featuring my buddy, Coach Dane Smith from St. Andrew's Episcopal in Potomac, Maryland. My name is Eric Bickle. I'm one of the sports junkies on 106.7 The Fan in D.C. and NBC Sports Washington. Dane played at Robert Morris, was a two-time captain there, and after some stints coaching at the D3 and D1 level, is now the head coach at St. Andrew's Episcopal in Potomac. Coach Dane, how you doing, buddy?
Doing well, man. Just like you, just got off the golf course. So
right?
Can't complain.
You know, can't complain. It's a nice relief to get out there a little bit, right?
It is. It is. Anytime my wife lets me go do it, I'm going to take advantage of it. But sometimes I don't know why. You know what I mean? So I'm glad this is a lacrosse podcast, not a golf podcast.
Well, you know, I'm thinking about starting a golf podcast, too.
I saw that.
Yeah, I've been thinking about it for a while. It's just going to be another pain. But
I got to admit, I felt a little bit cheated on. I saw that.
You want to go? You want to get on this?
No, I didn't know if you're planning on canceling.
Oh,
this
quitting
podcast.
This one? No, not yet. No, I'm still in.
Give me a week's notice. I gotta find another job.
No. I love doing this one. But it's just, you know, I love talking about lacrosse, and I love talking about golf too. And it's a shame that I'm not good at either one of them. But
yeah.
But
I think you're a better golfer. I've seen you with a lacrosse stick.
Yeah, it is what it is. Today was a beautiful day. It was great to get out there, get some fresh air. We've all been sort of locked down to some extent still. So to get outside is great.
Yeah, definitely.
And, you know.
Was the course packed?
Oh, yeah. I talked to the pro there where I played today, and he said every day is like a Saturday.
Yeah.
Literally around here, you know, in Maryland.
Yeah,
every
my father-in-law
day.
Said the same thing. He was actually pissed because his country club usually plays pretty fast because everyone's working and he's retired. But now, you know, no one's retired. Everyone's retired.
Yeah, right.
Everyone's out there playing golf.
Everyone's retired or fired, and
you're
out playing golf. It's great to get out there. Actually, shout out to Renditions. Had a great time. Amen Corner tripped me up, as it always did. I think it was four over through Amen Corner, so I would not win the green jacket today. I think I also doubled the Sawgrass hole, 17th there. So just an all-around rough day for your boy, but we had a great time, and it was perfect weather.
Yes, it was great.
Weather.
Perfect lacrosse weather.
Yeah.
And that's starting up this week. I know with my club team, we're doing some small group activities. Can't wait to get to the field on Thursday. So it's getting close to maybe somewhat getting back to normal.
Yeah, I love that. Today we have a special guest. We talked to PLL All-Star and Archers attackman and University of Utah men's assistant lacrosse coach Will Manny. Excited to talk to Will. Big star. Man, when I was just looking at his bio and the things he's done as a professional and in college at the high school level, I mean, this guy's just an absolute stud.
Yeah, absolute stud, and played for you know, one of the best high school programs in the country at St. Anthony's in Long Island, and then obviously, you know, UMass in this area. Probably, you know, not a lot of people follow UMass, but when he was there, I think they went 15-0 and I think lost in the NCAA tournament. But you know, he was a Touraton finalist, and like I said before, he got on, he's a little, you know, smaller guy. I don't know if he's going to get pissed for me saying this, but you know, 5'9", 160, and maybe he's put on some weight now. He's 170. Who knows? But that's why I love lacrosse, man. You can play it at any
all sizes.
Any size, exactly. It doesn't hurt if you're 6'3", 6'4", but
right.
But certainly cool to see him kind of rip it up in the PLL.
We're not all built like Miles Jones or Paul Rabel, right?
No.
So
I'm still holding out hope, but as of right now, I am not.
I was thinking maybe I grew today because my pants were longer, my golf pants. But then I figured, you know what? That just means I'm fatter. They were just up higher around my waist.
It's the quarantine diet, man. It'll get
you. Yeah, it's got me for sure. So, yeah, a couple things we want to touch on before we bring Will in. Some new rule proposals that look like they're being pretty well received. And I think we kind of expect these things to pass, right?
Yeah, I mean, we'll see. I think they said it's like a 2 week or, you know, there's a gap period where they need to the rules are proposed and then they'll vote on them to finalize them. But, you know, obviously the big rule change was the rule at the faceoff X. And so I think July 22nd is when they come back together and determine whether they're going to do them, whether they test them in the fall or what it would look like. Kind of similar with the shot clock. Like people, I'm sure, remember with the shot clock, they would test in the fall and then, you know, the rules change every 2 years or they vote on them. And, right, you know, one time they didn't move to it. The next voting cycle they did. And thank God they did, because that's been, you know, the best thing for the game. But yeah, the face-off, they got rid of, you know, face-off guys being able to go to a knee. And that, you know, that's a big part. And, you know, I would say majority of face-off guys certainly probably prefer that. And I don't want to speak for every face-off guy, but I think that's definitely the majority of what you see guys do is start the face-off on their knee. And then they got rid of the motorcycle grip. So, you know, palm is actually going to be underneath the stick, which is the neutral grip. And so really just the emphasis and the reason they're doing it is they want to speed the game up. And they want right. to prevent, you know, these stalls in the middle of the field off after a goal. You know, if you're a,
you think they're intentional stalls?
No, they're not intentional at all. It's just more so those guys are battling.
You I know love I mean? Those battles, though. I'm sure those guys get beat up and they don't necessarily love it, but I love it as a fan. I love that when they're spinning around wrestling.
I think you're an educated fan. You know what I mean? So you're like, I know what's going on. I think for the fan that like is clicking on TV and you're watching lacrosse for the first time, you might be like, what the hell is going on? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, what are they doing?
Looks like rugby or something.
Yeah, exactly. It just doesn't look like that should be going on. So I think, you know, it's been going this way for a few years now, right? They've been, all right, you've got to get it. Used to be put in your back a stick and you used to run around. I remember when I was coaching in college, it was Kenny Mass, I believe. Brian had the number one faceoff guy in the country and he could keep it in the back of his stick. So we literally we didn't win a face-off and we just chased him around the field. Think about how dumb that looks about now. But he's running around like egg and spoon, just trying to get the ball from him. And so they got rid of that rule. So this with the face-off is the ball's going to have to get out pretty quickly. It's going to make ground balls a lot more important. They're already the most important thing part of the game. But it's, you know, I don't know exactly how it will play out. But, you know, logically it says that, you know, guys are going to have more 50-50 ground balls. It's going to get out quicker. I know there were talks about bringing the wings in as well, because you got to imagine if there's more ground balls, guys are going to have 10-yard sprints running in and you got big athletes. So if you bring the wings in a little bit, maybe that lessens the contact. But
so who are they trying to neutralize? Are they trying to neutralize like super quick kids or no? Are they trying to emphasize that? I mean?
I think what they're trying to neutralize is I would argue if they're trying to neutralize dominant faceoff guys being super, super important, right? And so if you have a guy like, you know, T.D. Earland, Trevor Baptiste, like it's a game changer. I don't think this rule does that. I mean, those guys are going to adapt and going to keep winning faceoffs.
I mean, they're still going to beat you to the clamp, right? Or no?
Yeah, of course. Yes. Yeah. And let's be clear. This isn't a rule where it's like, oh, my God, guys have to figure out how to face off like this. They know how to face off like this. Mm-hmm. They've been doing it. And I'm sure during games – whether it's, you know, guys like T.D. Earland or best in the world or high school guys, they all have this in the toolbox, you know, whether they go to it when they're facing off against a pole, whether they go to it because the guy they're going against is really heavy handed and he's big. You think about the guys that are really, you know, bulky guys, and they're not maybe as great athletes, but they can get on a knee and have a ton of weight on their hands.
Right.
You know, after the whistle, I think it takes those guys kind of out of it. Because you're standing, you're already in an athletic position. You got to get up and get out and play.
Right.
But the guys, the technicians, the guys that know how to win a clamp and put the ball where they want it, they're going to still do it. I mean, I don't think that will change.
Right. And face-off guys, like I saw the Beast, I saw, you know, some of his like social media stuff, and he's like, yeah, we've been teaching this and we know how to adapt to this. They're taking a few tools away, but we all know how to do this. So he seems to be like taking it well. I saw a guy like TD, he seemed to be like sort of pissed off about it.
Right. I did see that too. And
yeah.
And face off such like a craft, right? And so those guys, like, you know, I didn't face off in college or anything like that, so I can't speak to someone like Greg Grillion, who's, you know, one of the best to ever do it and runs this, you know, he loves it. I'm sure he loves it. Change the rules every 2 years and kids keep signing up and they have to, you know, learn how to do the new rules. But I know that's not why he's saying. He was just had the right mindset. Let's adapt and figure out a way to do it. They've changed the rules in years before, just like I said, and there were people that weren't happy about it. But they all adapted the best. The cream will rise to the top. And so I like it. I mean, I, you know, selfishly, we have a face-off guy that's a little bit leaner, and I think it bodes well.
Helps him.
What he does.
Yeah.
And so you might see the position change a little bit. But
like by body type? You think it'll totally change the body type? Like those wrestler, low center of gravity guys may not be.
I think you just have to be a better athlete.
Yeah.
And not to say that the guys that, like Trevor Baptiste is a great athlete, plays in the NLL, and like those guys at the top level are great athletes. But I think at the college level, sometimes you see, you know, some guys that are maybe not as great athletes be able to do really well at the faceoff. If it's more of a 50-50 ground ball, if it's more of a, you know, you got to throw it out in front and run onto it rather than like pinch and pop to yourself, then you might see a little bit of a shift.
Now, what about the crease rule that they're trying to tweak again? Now, you're not, I guess, if you're pushed into the goal mouth, it still doesn't matter. It's still going to be a foul.
Yeah, it's idea? Funny because that is the proposal. Is that it used to be, and I say it used to be, at the high school level, we do play NCAA rules in our conference.
Right.
And, you know, most private schools in Maryland do. We didn't even get experience. You know, they added like the little, I call it like a snow cone. It looks like a snow cone.
Yeah.
And that's the goal mouth. And before, if you were pushed into it, you could still score.
Mm-hmm.
Now they're basically like nixing all that, just saying you cannot land in it at all.
But you can still land in the crease, just not the goal mouth.
Correct.
And as long as you're like at an angle, not straight on.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Now the space between the goal mouth and the crease is relatively small, so you have a good aiming point,
but you can still take off before the crease, get rid of it, land not in the goal mouth, but in the crease and be a goal.
Yep. So the dive is still in play. You just can't, like before, you can't dive at the goal, obviously. And so we'll see. I mean, I think that's a minor one. I mean, it makes sense. You know, it just makes it easier for the refs. It's like, is he in the goal mouth? Okay, doesn't matter how he got there.
So
it's not a goal.
So does that change defensively? Like, so if I'm a defender, am I just going to push him in the goal mouth when a kid starts diving? Or do you have that kind of time to do that and think that quick? Because that's not going to be a penalty on me, right?
No, it will still be a penalty. It just won't be a goal.
They'll take away the goal.
But they'll call a flag if it's a push in the back.
Oh, but they'll still call the flag because it's pushed
exactly.
in the back.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. So, right. And that's similar to what happens now. If you get beat on an inside roll, you know, coming up from an attackman and you can't take the ball away, you know, coaches would be like, worst case scenario, push him in the back. Don't let him score.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? We'll take a 30-second penalty and take our chances. You know, hopefully you don't get beat that way, but that's just, you know, I'm certainly, you know, some coaches will teach that.
Right. All right. We also should touch on the NCAA pushing back the dead period now until what? At least July 31.
Yeah, exactly.
Can't see any kids live.
Yeah, and I'm sure Manny will talk about this. Will Manny? And so I don't want to be too long winded here, but the long and short of it is, you know, basically, you know, there's no recruiting going on this summer. Live recruiting, the dead period, meaning like typically the dead period started like August 2nd or 3rd, the first week of August. There's like one or a couple days in August where they could recruit. So there's been question: will they make the August a live period? And all the coaches, and there was a poll on Inside Lacrosse, they had a good article basically thinking that most coaches don't think that will happen. And I would probably agree with that. And so most coaches are going to be, all the club events now are kind of broadcasting, like all our games will be archived for coaches. So like they'll be saved. You won't even necessarily have to send your film because it's like these coaches will have access. It's just
they'll
more
just hit it up. Yeah.
Yeah. I think the biggest thing for kids is like, just like we had Brett Manny on talking about having a advocate. You're going to have to make sure that you're telling these coaches to watch the games that you're in. Like, you know what I mean?
And right.
Because think about it, an archived, you know, club tournament where, you know, you have all the 21 teams playing.
But that's great, though, because, you know, coaches could actually see more players, right? And you have a better chance.
Yeah.
You know,
one of the coaches in the survey, and I love it, I think it was High Points coach, talked about they can watch the whole game as an entire staff.
Right.
Think about that, because what we used to do on the road is like, you know, I used to go and watch, you know.
You have to pick and choose.
Well, yeah, but we'd have to come back together and like, let's compare notes. Did you see this kid play? What you think?
Yeah.
And maybe, you know, he sucked at this event, but he like play amazing at the other event. And then we ultimately come to a stalemate. Like if the head coach doesn't love him, we're probably not going to take him.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Whereas now if all the coaches can come together, but it's going to put a crunch, man. I really feel bad for these 21s. I mean, I starting some meetings here next week with some of our guys and trying to plan out the summer that now that we know a little bit more about what's going to happen, it's just, there's no other way to put it, but it just crunches.
Yeah.
Crunches in big time.
Yeah.
Big time.
Especially with everybody coming back for an extra year now for the foreseeable future.
Well, that's what I mean. Like it's
weird.
Basically it's both.
Yeah.
It's both. It couldn't be worse, but you know, we'll see. We'll figure it out. You know what I mean?
All right. When we come back, we're going to zoom in. Will Manny. He's of course a 5-time professional all-star attackman for the PLL Archers. And he's the current assistant men's lacrosse coach at the University of Utah. Don't go anywhere. All right, welcome back. It's my pleasure to introduce our guest today, 5-time professional all-star, 4 times in the MLL, 1 time, of course, with the PLL. Manny led the league in the inaugural Premier Lacrosse League season with 35 goals, 50 points for Archers LC. Let me see, in the Archers playoff game against the Atlas, he set league records. Are you ready for this, Dane? 7 goals. 11 points, led all players in the playoffs with 13 goals, 7 assists, 20 points. Competed 6 seasons in the MLL, ranked among the top 10 in the league in points his last 4 years in the league. Of course, he attended St. Anthony's High School, went to UMass, was a first-team All-American, 2012 Tuwarton finalist, CAA Player of the Year. I mean, it just never ends. He was named to the 2019 PLL All-Star Game and currently works as assistant coach for the University of Utah. Ladies and gentlemen, mostly gentlemen, I'm assuming, I'm proud to introduce our guy, Will Manny. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing well, Eric. Thanks for having me, man. It's awesome to be here with you guys. And again, just during this time, it's always good to get on and talk some lacrosse, talk some life, and have some fun. So thanks for having me.
Yeah, of course. I mean, what else is there to do? I mean, things are opening up. But it's been kind of great for us, for Dane and I know, because guys are just kind of like sitting ducks. We're like, oh, we'll call Rabel. He's got nowhere to go. You know?
The lacrosse community is willing, that's for sure.
Yeah, yeah. What's it been like for you? Just like, I don't know, the last few weeks or so, you're in Utah, right? So things are a little bit more open there maybe than other places?
Yeah, it's a little more open. You know, the school is still shut down, so I can't use the weight room there and whatnot. But our strength staff in the beginning of all this opened up the weight room and allowed the staff and people that work there to grab whatever kind of weights and bands and kettlebells that we needed to be work out at home. And so the workout stuff has been great, you know, just been creative and on my own schedule, and still have access to our field. So I use our Utah field every other day. I was pretty much going 2 weeks straight for a while, and just to get outside and do something. And I've been doing some lessons with some young guns out here. And so I've been staying active, which is good. And what I've been telling a lot of people is when this all happened, I kind of just told myself, I'm going to be positive about this. You know, if you're negative, it's just going to make it that much worse, and try to find the positive light in it. And so it's good. And then obviously I'm sure we'll talk about it, but once the PLL announced we're actually going to be playing, that sparked a little fire under me a little bit, and even ramped up my training and how I'm feeling about the rest of this moving forward. So it's all good.
You had to be kind of like in almost like purgatory there for a little bit, right? Your college season ends, and then, you know, with all professional leagues basically going on hold, you had to think it probably not going to get back into it. At least that's what it looked like for a while. So I know Paul and those guys did a great job of being creative and being the first to do it. But there's had to be a gap where you're just kind of like, what the hell do I do? I mean, I know all across are like, we've been doing it our whole life, and now there's nothing, you know?
Yeah, it was, I forgot, I don't know how long into it was, because season got canceled. I think it was when all of our guys ended up going home. So it was like a week and a half after our college season got canceled. And when all the guys were not there, I was like, so we really don't have anything, you know? And then, so I knew our college season was over, and that is what it is, right? It's not like, it's just us or just our conference or whatever it may be. It's everybody, you know? So I have a ton of friends who are in college coaching. So I was talking to those guys, and we were just trying to stay positive about it. And then once we found out the PLL was getting delayed, AKA 80% of our heads were saying, we're not playing this summer, you know? And that was kind of dwelling on me for a little bit. But guys on my team with the Archers, man, are very hopeful and grateful for everything. And we've kind of had a positive attitude the whole entire time with it. And little do we know, a couple weeks later, Paul and Mike are just doing what they do well and make shit happen. And just very fortunate for us to be able to play a 3-week tournament like this and crown a champion and get paid and be on NBC during the Olympics and all that stuff. So all great stuff that came out of it, which could have been zero. So
yeah, I mean, I think it's just brilliant too. And then they really were able to capitalize sort of on the publicity of it all, being one of the first to get to market and have the plan and just, you know, sort of whole, you know, the World Cup, World Games sort of model is super exciting too, right? I mean, the games are going to be incredible. They're going to be one right after another. You know, I actually think it could be a win-win. You know what I mean? Like, it could be a mask. If there's not that much else going on, you know, you guys are potentially going to get bumped up. More games are going to be, you know, less on the gold or whatever and more on NBC, more exposure for you guys. You know, what's that like? You know, you played in the MLL and, you know, look, those of us that love lacrosse, we're familiar with it. We would dig around to try to find it. But when you play on NBC, that takes it to another level.
Yeah, that was one of my favorite pieces to the puzzle for this PLL situation was just being able to, and I always make this reference where my grandmother can turn on her TV and then watch a game, see clearly and see my face through my helmet, you know, and instead of on, again, I mean, I don't bash any other league, you know, it is what it is, you know, but just the clarity and the professionalism of everything, Ryan Boyle and Brendan Burke on the call, like it seems like you are there.
Yeah.
Smaller field, more action. And the TV situation was huge just because, again, I'm a veteran now in the professional ranks. You know, I'm on my eighth year and it doesn't feel that way. I feel like I'm going to play another eight.
All right.
But it's great, you know, especially now, since it's tour based, you know, like I'm not on the Lizards anymore or anything where my parents drive 10 minutes to Hofstra to watch me play.
Right.
And every other weekend, you know, where they don't have to go to every game. They could just pick their sites that they want to go to and have fun. They went to Chicago for the first time this past summer to see me play. And other games, they could sit back and watch NBC and NBC Sports and really tune into a great production.
Plus, I can't even imagine, Dane, what it's like. I mean, you guys are like rock stars going from town to town, the touring model. I mean, I can't even imagine what the weekends are like. So much fun for you guys, right? The touring model has its pluses. There's no doubt about it, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it was great. You know, four or five of the cities we played in before in other professional with the MLL. And then there was a couple that I've never been to and Chicago I've never been to. So that was a really cool experience. And we played the Whip Snakes there. We lost by one in overtime. It was raining and the crowd was packed.
Right.
You know, and it's just like you look at Philly on the final weekend. You know, we played the first place game before the championship and there was 12,000 people there. You know, it's like the affection for lacrosse, having one weekend in one city for a younger kid who's in Chicago that doesn't have a MLL team or a professional lacrosse. Like they have that circled on their weekends for months ahead of time, you know, and it stinks for this summer that we were supposed to be coming to Salt Lake on the last weekend of the regular season.
Right.
For pretty much Archer's home game, but
yeah. Rumor is you might be going back out there, right? I know, and maybe you don't even know, but we've done some digging and I know you're crossing your fingers. I know Paul, when he was on air, he said we were like, Eric and I were kind of poking that Florida sounds good. New Jersey sounds good. And he brought up Salt Lake. So it could be a possibility, right?
Yeah, I think it's a high possibility. Just, again, IMG is a sick facility and whatnot. But during this time, during the summer, if you try to stay down there for 2 weeks, through 2.5 weeks, it rains every day down there at 1 o'clock during the summer. I have a condo down in Florida, right in Naples area. And it does. You know, my dad golfs down there at this time and having that to deal with for two weeks straight with all the lacrosse games you need to play, it would be a problem. And out here, there's no humidity. It's dry, rarely rains.
Putting on a sales pitch.
Yeah. So I've done this for a while. So like we had to push it to get to Rio Tinto Stadium for this summer. So hopefully they carry it over till next summer.
That would be awesome. That would be phenomenal. Are you doing it? You mentioned like the 2 to 3 weeks, and that's something we mentioned to Paul just about the heat in Florida. I know it'll be hot in Salt Lake too, but like, are you training any differently to prepare for, you know, essentially what is like the World Games, right? It's going to be a lot of lacrosse in a short period of time.
Yeah, it's definitely a little bit different. You know, I've been trying. I pick a certain amount of days, two days a week right now, where I'll lift and shoot. So I'll lift hard and do my workout and then eat lunch and then go out and shoot later in the day, kind of do a 2-a-day thing. And now Marcus is back from the East Coast, so we've been going out to shoot right in the middle of the day when it's the warmest, you know, and hot outside, just to get used to that a little bit with the helmet and gloves and elbow pads on. And just the only thing I'm really missing in my training is going against a defender, you know, and just kind of get beat up a little bit. But we have a 3 or 4 day like grace period before this championship series starts as like a little mini training camp for that. But yeah, I've just been trying to, what I've been telling people, whether it's a podcast or a Zoom call, I'm at a point in my career where I go until I'm comfortable. You know, I'm not overdoing it anymore. I know I'm not under training because that's not who I am in general, but if I'm sore, like today I was really sore from my workouts the past 2 days. Like I took it a little easier today. You know, I don't really have to go to push my limits and overtrain where I can put myself at risk. You know, I think the way I play is a little bit smarter than a lot of people. Just the way I could conserve energy on this and expend it on something that is going to mean something to me personally throughout a game. And I just kind of listen to my body a little bit more now, and I feel like I'm in great shape. I feel like I could play tomorrow, so I'll be ready to rock.
I would say it's working for sure.
have you felt like you're at that point where you have to compensate for different, you know, sort of physical things as you've gotten older, or you still feel like you're at sort of your physical peak and you could still, you know, get to that fifth gear or whatever that you were able to when you were 22, 23?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. I'm not as strong as I was when I was in college. You know, like I can't squat 350 pounds like I used to, you know, but I feel like I could play back-to-back games. You know, I don't ever feel like I'm tired at the end of a game, which for me is more my conditioning and the different style of training that I've learned from 2013, you know, to now. 7 years is a long time of different types of training you can learn about, especially in lacrosse. You know, that I feel like the training and strength coaches and personal trainers who coach lacrosse players have found out a way to train lacrosse players. And I've kind of followed that path as well. It's not just Olympic lifts and back squats and right. deadlifts, you know, there's certain ways to get a little bit more flexible and mobile, which I've been doing with, right? Instead of putting weight on my back, I'll just hold dumbbells on my shoulders and do my squats and my jump, like split squats and stuff like that, to be a little bit more agile.
But what about like with your dodging and that sort of thing? Like, can you still just, you know, physically do what you've always been able to do, or do you have to use your mind a little bit more?
Yeah, no, it's to answer the question, I use my mind more now. You know, when I was in college, I was more of a quarterback. I dodged at X, and I was the guy who had the ball in my stick a lot.
Right.
Now I have the ball in my stick for 5 seconds, and I have 5 goals throughout the game. You know,
right.
And my game has changed a little bit. Playing with Tom Schreiber, playing with the guys I play with, it makes my life a lot easier. And now Grant Amant coming in, you know, me and Marcus made a joke where we said our careers just got extended by 4 or 5 years because we're not going to get beat up as much because we don't dodge, you know. So, but yeah, I feel capable, you know, but I play my role. I don't know. I think that's the easiest way to play with people is I don't need to dodge in our system. You know, I'll dodge in a big little set when I have a guy come set a pick for me, but I don't need to be a one-on-one dodger anymore. And I honestly, I feel like I'd be fine, but I get beat up enough. So I think I'll right. leave that to Tom and Grant.
Right. That's what, well, Eric and I were kind of talking about it too. And not that you're a small guy, but like you can play lacrosse at any height, any size. You can find your role, whether it's off ball, on ball. And, yep. But your game's had to evolve, right? Cause I'm sure in high school, even though you played at one of the best high schools, I'm sure you were probably the best player on your team and had to do everything. And then college, same thing, but you just, you, have you always found it, had a knack to find space off ball, or was that something when you got into the professional leagues, you're like, maybe it's not as hard to, it's a lot harder to score dodging in this league, you know, so I got to find a change my game a little bit.
Yeah, no, it's a great question. And for sure, you know, I've had the luck of playing with great players in high school, you know, 8 guys when I was a senior in high school went and played Division I. Mm-hmm. You know, Tom Shriver was a junior at St. Anthony's when I was a senior. Like, I played with him for 3 straight years. And going to college, you know, I went to a school where I was going to play for 4 years. I didn't know what my role was going to be. I didn't know if I was going to be on the left side or at X, and just ended up being me being a Dodger behind the goal. And when I got to the pros, this is something I've talked to about on Paul's podcast too, because he always talks to me about my off-ball play and how I've developed. And my first year in professional lacrosse, I get drafted to the Cannons, you know, and Ryan Boyle, Paul Rabel, Kevin Buchanan. I can go down the list, you know, and right. I'm like, legend, like 3 of the guys I idolized. And I was like, okay, I'm not going to be dodging and making guys fall over anymore versus Drexel and stuff right. like that. You know, this is the big boy league, and I'm going to get my ass kicked if I mess around too much. So, I found my role real quick. You know, that is something Ryan Boyle taught me, and I'll pass that on to ages and ages until I'm done playing or coaching this game is understand who your teammates are. You know, one thing that I kind of adore about my style and my game is that I know everything about those guys. I know what they're doing because I watch film. And when I got to the field with those guys, I just said, I'm going to cause as much havoc as I can. If I'm open, throw it to me, I'll catch it, you know? And that was the relationship I built with them, is that I showed them I have really good hands and they could trust me. If they see a little window, throw it and I'll catch it. That's how I became a really good shooter. You know, I spent pre-practice and post-practices with Ryan Boyle and Paul all the time. You do that for 10, 11, 12 weekends in a row, you get a lot more reps than you think. And that kind of carried me into the pro league. And it kind of varied a little bit, because 2 years later when Paul left and Boyle retired, like, I was the guy at X. Like, then we had Davey Emel, and I had 25, 30 assists that summer, you know? So it's just being able to do both is something really important, and it all starts with knowing who your teammates are.
Can you talk a little bit about the recruiting process for you? It's something that we like to talk about sort of every week. It's so crazy in lacrosse. Luckily, it's kind of normalized a little bit. You don't have to, in 8th grade, pick what college you're going to go to. At least wait till your junior year. What was that process like for you, and how did you end up at UMass?
Yeah, so the recruiting process, thank God, is back to how it was when I was getting recruited. You know, you can't talk till 9-1 of your junior year, and I'm very thankful for that. I'm just going to throw that out there to start. Yeah. I think that was abysmal and gross that we were recruiting 8th graders. Mm-hmm. But yeah, for me, it was more of under the radar. You know, didn't get a letter from a ACC school, Big Ten school. I got 2 Ivy League letters, but that wasn't really my goal. I think I'm a good student, but that was a little bit more of a reach for me at the time. I think it would be a little bit different now, honestly. I think I'd be able to figure out and want to go to one of those schools a little bit more. But for me, I'll always remember, it was top 205 camp. And I don't remember who my coach was, but I remember there was 30 coaches on the sideline. And right before halftime, I think it was, of a game, other team picked up a loose ball off the end line. They were clearing it with like 10 seconds to go. And, you know, kids, summer league and this, that, they kind of can give up and just play loose. And I played to that last whistle. I rode the ball back and I got an assist with 1 second left. I'm pretty sure it was. And just showed a lot of energy and high-fived my teammates and got the sideline going a little bit. And I remember Coach Canella talking to me on the phone and writing me a letter explaining that exact play. Mm-hmm. And I never received any letter like that from any other coach, you know, being descriptive and remembering a play and saying size doesn't matter and saying that you're quick, you're tough, saw me take hits, you know. So to just kind of centralize it on UMass, it was more of the relationship and the trust that I got from Coach Canella right off the bat. And then when I went to their practice and went up to visit campus, the style that they had at practice was just up tempo, fast paced, a lot of ball movement and playing fast. And that's kind of how I was when I was younger to now. That's the style of play that I have. And he just saw something in me that I didn't hear from anybody else. You know, that other coaches might have seen it, but they didn't express as much interest as he did. And that's why I committed to him in April, I think, of my junior year. And, you know, the rest is really history. I feel like we together brought UMass. I mean, in 06, they were in the national title game, but we brought UMass back on the map a little bit, you know, 15-0 season, number one ranking. And now they were crushing it this year too. So the team, that program has so much just tradition. And I feel like that will stick with me for the rest of my life, just hardworking and underrated. And that's kind of how he, as a father, like a second father figure to me, was able to affect my life. So,
you know, it's interesting. A lot of people talk about the top 205, right? And that doesn't exist anymore. But like, what's the equivalent today? I mean, I don't even know. You know, as a father of a lacrosse kid,
way too many events.
Is it like the Under Armour tryouts or something? Like, what would be the equivalent?
Let me start with this. It's more like top 410. You know, there's not 205 guys there.
Right.
And that was the other thing with my recruiting process, guys. Like, I didn't get recruited or invited to Blue Chip. I didn't get invited to any of this shit. Like, I remember somebody dropped out and I somehow got into top 205. Like,
yeah,
that was just the story of my career. But now it's more just team events, and recruiting, like the NLF stuff, which is good. You know, I think it's good to play with your teams. I feel like you could see the chemistry and see each guy play their role within their system. You know, when you play at an individual showcase or a top 205 camp, you've never played with guys, it can be really sloppy, and guys can get really selfish. And yeah, that can help somebody, right? You could see a kid you really like score 7 goals the first day, and then you go watch him the second day and he has 15 turnovers and he's head hanging because he's tired. And that might not happen if you're playing with your actual team, because you know the guys around you. But I love the recruiting, man. I know some coaches don't like it. Some coaches do. I just enjoy watching how talented some of these younger kids are nowadays. It's absurd.
Right.
I'm actually glad it's not those camps. It's fun to watch the teams now.
Yeah. And plus, I mean, Eric, you're going to test that too, because it's, you know, your son was one of those guys at those showcase events. It was not, you know, able to show out as much because, you know, those off-ball players, those guys that need their teammates, they need to have a little bit of a system. You know what I mean?
My son is not a guy necessarily just going to go to the cage. He's just going to be the open guy, hit him.
But when he played with us at the high school level, you know, not that we would move him around, but we knew his strengths. And
right,
like a top 205 in those events, it's like the horses are going to show, and then the rest of the guys are going to kind of fall to the wayside. So, but you've got to be missing the recruiting piece if that is a big part of what you love. And, you know, I loved it as a college coach too. I could tell you the swamp butt that you get, you know, in 90-degree weather for 3 straight months. I could do without that, but tell us about kind of what that was like. Now that you, what are you guys dealing with as college coaches? Because that's the other big part of your career is trying to take a program like Utah and bring it to the national level, which I know you've done a great job. But yeah, with the recruiting this summer, obviously that's something Eric and I talked about. Like, it's not going on, right?
Yeah, so it's tough, you know, and like I said a little bit earlier, it's when they cancel the season, it's we're all in it together, you know, like every team and every NCAA sport in the spring. It's so for this, it's not like Hopkins and Maryland can go watch kids play and recruit. You know, it's everybody. We can't recruit.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been a lot of film. You know, a lot of kids are sending us some tape and a lot of calling the club coaches and talking about, right, what we like to do is tier the guys, you know, like give me your top 5, like tier 1 guys, and then give me the next 5 guys, and just kind of get those names, learn a little bit more about them. And right, these are 22s now, so the juniors, rising juniors that we can't talk to yet that we're recruiting, and just watching their film and kind of taking notes on them, so when I do call them on 9-1, you know, I've seen a lot of them play too. You know, I wasn't just recruiting 21s last year. I was watching some of the 2 games. So I have a good understanding of the kids that I like. But like I said earlier with Coach Canella, just having a conversation of trying to remember plays and talk to them how they could fit in our system. I think that hits with these kids a lot better than just saying, oh, Chris, like, you're a great player. Like, come visit Utah. You know, like, that's just so old nowadays. You got to be different. And I just feel like with our younger staff, me, Marcus, and Adam, it just we can relate to the kids a lot better, especially playing still. And then you have Brian Holman, who's absolute legend and has been coaching for 30 years and knows the black and white of lacrosse and keeps it simple. So it's different, man. You know, it's
right.
Just
what about what about the 21s? What do you got? Where do you guys sit with 21s? I know you can't talk about specific recruits.
Yeah, we're in a good spot. I think we probably have one, maybe two spots left, just in case we find a late bloomer or a guy that potentially decommits from somewhere. Our 21 class is great, man. We got kids from all over Philly. We got two Long Island kids. We got Florida. So the talent level is rising quickly with our recruiting classes, and it's awesome to see. So credit to the school for giving us what we need to try to be successful in a short amount of time, and credit to the staff, you know, for putting whatever we can out there and showing these kids, like, you're not only going to become a better lacrosse player, but a better person when you leave here. And you know, I keep looking out the window when I'm talking to you guys right now, because the sunset is getting unbelievable right now. You know, I'm looking right at the mountain. So that's another big piece of, I know, Eric, you said earlier just about if you come out here, you're not going to want to leave.
Yeah, for sure.
True. So.
Yeah, what's that like when you bring a kid out on campus? I mean, I got to imagine your close rate is pretty high.
Yeah, it's funny that you say that, because that's the term I use. I go, when I talk to my friends, I go, our closing rate of kids that we want, kids that want to come visit, the closing rate's got to be over 90%.
Oh.
It's got to be.
Yeah, I mean, think about all the facilities, the beauty of the campus, right? Yeah. I mean, a lot of lacrosse schools can't compete with that.
Yeah, and it's great, you know, and for us to... Right, We're an honest group. The thing for us is getting into a conference. You know, we're an independent team, and it's tough. You know, you have to go 14-0 to even have a shot with how great some of these teams are now. And we're working really hard. The school is working really hard on helping us get into a conference, and that'll happen in the next couple of years, next 2 years, I would say. I have no idea where we're at with it, but I know they'll make it happen because they want us to win a national championship and get to a Final Four sooner rather than later.
Right.
Well, a spot just opened up. I mean, I don't know if I don't want to bring it. We just had Andrew Athens on last week. So, you know, maybe this OCON is a good fit for Utah. I mean, obviously, everyone in the lacrosse world is hoping that the Pac-12 will create something. But I know, you know, Eric and I have been talking about college athletics. And yeah, is that something you guys talk about as administrator, like within the staff of Utah, about if lacrosse has a future in a conference like the Pac-12?
Yeah. That's the dream, you know, like that would be our dream, to be the first Pac-12 team and then see a conference happen. You know, like that's a story to tell for the rest of our lives.
Of course. Yeah.
And then, you know, the head coach job at Oregon and USC open up and your boy is sitting pretty on the West Coast. Right. You know, I never go back East. but that's, you know, I think it's a long ways away. But I think what I always tell people is our success is going to help determine that, you know, if we can get into the tournament in the next 2-3 years, I think that will get the money rolling at Stanford and USC to be like, okay, we can win.
Right.
You know, and be a good lacrosse conference, especially with how big the sport's growing in high school right now. So
at this point in your career, what do you get more joy out of? Do you get more joy out of playing or more joy out of coaching?
It's a great question. And I will never take away winning a lacrosse game as a coach at the collegiate level. You know, seeing our kids, like when you have zero control when that stuff happens in a way, you know, it's like, you really have no idea what's going to happen. And for me and Marcus and Adam, guys who still play, it's really hard because we practice with the guys a lot. You know, we prepare them during the week. I play scout team for lefties all week long. It's so much fun. I enjoy playing more, you know, because that's not going to last forever. You know, I know I'll be coaching a lot longer than I will be playing. You know, and using your preparation and how much work you put in as a player is always satisfying. But I mean, winning a college game, you know, I always call my parents right after a game, and as a college coach, you know, and they're just so happy, you know, because it's just the kids, you just see their success. And that's the coolest part for me. And I know, Dan, you've been on both sides of it too. And it's just cool to really be, right, just see the staff preparing the guys all week and them executing a game plan, whether it's a one goal game where you blow a team out. It's not easy to win a lacrosse game at the D1 level anymore. It really isn't.
No. So. No, especially when you start from scratch, like you guys were, right?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah,
but they won five games their first year. I mean, that's the thing. I mean, it's not like, you know, I played at a startup, if you will, but in the fourth year of it, and it wasn't until our fifth year that we had a winning record. Our fourth year, my first year, Rob Morris, we won four games, right? Now, I know lacrosse is, you know, like you said, the talent level has been elevated, but and you guys brought in great classes and stuff like that. But to win, to be as competitive as you guys were in the first year and the schedule that you guys played as well, I mean, that's the thing. Like Coach Holman didn't, you know, Brian didn't shy away, and probably because he was a coach at UNC for so long, I'm sure he knows the value of playing those type of opponents. But
And it's the relationship. You know, we wouldn't have Duke, Virginia, and these schools, right? We were supposed to play Georgetown this year, and BU, and we played UMass. You know, like my connection with Coach Canelo, we were able to do that back-to-back years. But it's the relationships Brian built when he was there. You know, like, if he wasn't such a nice guy and a true leader in the sport, like Coach Stanowski and Lars would have shut that down. Like, right. No.
Right. I think you were on Marist's schschedule, weren't you? I think we were supposed to fly out there.
We were supposed to play Marist, yeah.
Yeah,
This year, I mean, the schedule the rest of this year was, we were going right into the meat of it. Duke, yeah. Georgetown, Virginia, BU. Like, we had some big dogs, and again, I feel like we were in a good spot where we just lost to Mount St. Mary's in a really ugly game. And I feel like our team was going to start hitting stride. And again, we could have went 0-7, or we could have won two of those games and pulled one out of our ass and surprised the country, you know? And, but again, I think it will all do its time and take its course, and we'll be right around hovering that tourney in the next couple of years. I know that's going to be done because of the school supporting us, and the recruiting is going so well right now. So
people don't realize too, with like newer schools, like there is really not a whole lot of value for those big schools to play you guys. That's what, I mean, that's where it was when we were, is, you know, they could play us, but why, you know, like it's almost a lose-lose where it's like, if you beat them, you were supposed to, quote unquote. And if you lose, it's like tragic for your chances to get in the tournament, especially if you don't get that AQ. But credit to those other coaches to kind of step it up and saying, because that's how we grow the game, right? Like, to get Utah on a national 100%. Stage against Duke is like huge. You know what I mean? Yep.
And that's, again, that's, you find out a lot at a school like Utah, you know, where we're at now, and it starts with scheduling games, or, you know, growing the game. You really find out other coaches who back that up. And just like you were saying, Dane, it's like Coach Stanowski is, right, he has the relationship with Marcus and all of us from Team USA training camps and the training teams, and Marcus on USA, and obviously Brian, and then Virginia with Adam, that's where Adam played, and Lars supporting us doing that. And then you find out some of the guys that might talk a big game, and then when we're trying to get into a conference now, they're like, yeah, now we're good. You know, and it's just like, that, come on, man. Like, and it's not like, I get it's difficult, you know, I get coming out here is a lot of money, but sometimes one of those big 10 schools that has a shitload of money from football, like, you could do that. Like, right. We know you can. But again, I understand it, you know, and recruiting against us, that's been a common, we don't want you in the conference kind of excuse. And I get it. I get it all, but it's just, you truly find out who really is into growing the game and supports us. And, during this time when you're trying to schedule an independent schedule and right. then trying to get into a conference. So,
well, listen, man, talking about growing the game, it's been awesome having you on. Great to get to know you a little bit. Really, really appreciate it. I know the PLL is huge on social media. Let's get it out there for you. Twitter, Instagram, and all that. How do people follow you?
Yeah, so it's funny. I was actually on the phone with Twitter and with Tyler Steinhardt, our one of our social media directors at the Premier Lacrosse League today, because my Twitter got hacked a month ago, and I still don't have access to it.
Oh no!
There's been no activity. It's just sitting there. I looked it up today, and
right.
I just can't sign in, and I've emailed Twitter 5 or 6 times. Twitter, if you're listening, please respond to my email. But on Instagram, it's @WillNanny1. I'm going to have to change that at some, maybe at the end of the summer, I'll change it to 4.
Right.
What about TikTok? We talked about that earlier.
Yeah, you a TikTok guy going to dance for us?
You could just keep going to the next person, because that will never happen.
Yeah. I'm still waiting, Eric. I'm still waiting on yours, man.
No, it's not going to happen. I promise. It. Maybe my daughters.
Please. If you have a daughter, Eric, just don't let her do it.
Oh, it's too late. It's
They're
way
on their
too
phones
late.
Enough.
Yeah, yeah. You're not kidding.
But yeah, I appreciate you guys having me. You know, just having conversations like this is always nice to, you know, just have a good laugh and learn a little bit about each other and the game of lacrosse. And it's cool because I feel like a lot of people are willing to do this now in the lacrosse world. Some people that you might not have heard from a lot in the past, and I'm just looking forward to hopefully the lacrosse world really enjoying the PLL and NBC at the end of the summer.
It's going to be
like
amazing.
Earlier.
Yeah,
it's going to be awesome.
It's going to be amazing.
It's good too. You know, well, we got to, I think we have a few listeners, and obviously we're local in DC. So it's great to get Utah out there, you know, with, you know, all the great lacrosse players that we have up and down this East Coast, and especially here in like the Mid Atlantic and
no doubt
stuff like that. So
no doubt,
I know if I hopped on that flight, I probably wouldn't come back either. But
yeah,
it's beautiful out there.
I wasn't good enough. Not how good these high school kids are now. So
yeah, you get the four seasons. You know, the summer's hot, but you got the lakes, and you can go rafting and hiking, and then fall's football season. It's beautiful weather. Winter's best snow in the United States, and then springtime's lacrosse season, baby. We were second in the country in home attendance this year behind Syracuse.
Wow.
That's crazy.
So, wow.
That's crazy.
You know, it's booming out here. And what I was talking about earlier with the PLL, just hopefully it's the only sport on television at that point. And I actually might have tweeted it out a little while ago. It's like, I hope my boy Steph Curry is sitting on his couch not playing and can watch the PLL and
right.
Give me a little shout out and see how quick my release is, just like his shot. But I sincerely think that might be an opportunity for more growth. You know, like,
oh, no doubt,
NFL or NBA guys sitting at home, and they all have NBC. They know when sports are on television, and
no doubt, huge opportunity. Really cool. Huge opportunity.
How cool would it be to see a guy like LeBron James tweet out and be like, shout out to Paul Rabil and the PLL for a sick whatever, you know?
Right.
Like that, I know it's going to happen. So it's really cool for the growth.
Because you know what? And I don't want to belabor this, and I'm going to let you go. But, you know, it is funny that just a few years ago when my son was out in Denver for a tournament, you know, and Denver's got a huge lacrosse scene. We were outside a restaurant, and we had just arrived, Dane. And I was like, dude, you better get used to this elevation and everything. Let's go run around, play a little catch or whatever before the tournament starts. And I was shocked that people still, they were like, what are you guys doing? Like, what is that? Those are lacrosse sticks? Like, they didn't even understand the sport. So as much as we're all in the world and we think it's great and it's up and coming, and it is, there's still a lot of people out there that still need to be educated and be hip to the sport, because it's an amazing sport. It's just incredible, and I'm late to it. Because I followed it through my son, and I fall in love with it. Now I'm so pissed I didn't play it, because I know I would have been a beast. But
the,
you know, it's just
that's the classic comment.
Exactly,
but you would have been the man.
I would have been an unbelievable midfielder. But nevertheless, it's just it's a great sport, and just more and more people need to be exposed to it. You know, and that's what I love about the PLL and with the NBC deal and everything. It's just great. So thank you, Will.
You guys, I appreciate you guys speaking well about it too. You know, I think everyone supporting it, and for us to be so behind it, and them trusting us with our opinions and what we need to be successful. That's what the whole sport needs. And I can see it going in a strong, positive manner from youth to high school to pros moving forward. And can't wait to be a part of it. So
no
thanks
doubt.
For having me.
No, yeah. Thank you so much. All right, for Will Manny, that's Dane Smith. I'm Eric Bickle. We will see you next time. Be safe out there, everybody.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.